Hello.
Hello.
That was odd. There was no link of it.
So it's the same link. All right. So in just a moment, very shortly, Peter will begin to talk to you about demons and what they are and clear up some myths, answer any questions that you might have regarding this topic. And as I said, I've popped the link to the article in the chat. So, if anyone wants to read that after this call, you can, if you've not yet read it already. And if you have any questions prepared, please do pop them in the chat. I'll be very happy to pass those on to Peter when the time is right. If questions arise as he is talking, same goes. And just to let you know that half an hour after the end of this call, Peter will be facilitating his workshop on Dakinis. And if anyone wants to join who is not a member, I have popped in the link for you to be able to join that workshop with us, which will be starting at 11:30 UK time. And I will spotlight Peter so that he can begin to talk to you all about demons, what they are, and all about the underworld, etc. So thank you so much, Peter.
Okay. So basically, the word demon comes from the Greek. It actually meant an astral being with wisdom. But they divide into two times, the Agatho demon and the Kakko demon, which are the good and bad demons, simply because they could have many different personalities. Some would be good at guidance and giving you good luck and helping with the long, others are mischievous and cause trouble. So they divide them into the kind of Agatho demons and the Kakko demons. It's interesting we look at the actual word because it's very similar to what in Arabic was called jinn. It actually in Arabic actually meant an unseen being, but basically it's any spirit that can be good or bad. So the different words have simply been for spirits. They wouldn't be good or bad, but there could be either way. Interesting when you compare this to the voodoo, the different loi, there's the Rada, which is spiritual, and the Petro, which is earthly and aggressive. Not seen as bad, they have their place. It depends how you use them. But you've got the spiritual ones and the more earthly, aggressive type. So you can see this is a common theme. So where the idea of it being bad came from? Well, of course, there were some bad demons, but as Socrates noted, and Socrates is very well known for having his demon he spoke to all his life that guided him, brought him good luck and helped him evolve and everything. In all his work, the demon helped him. He ended up being executed for it. That was before they had any idea of actually definition of a demon as being bad. Is it because it wasn't Christian? You see, this idea is coming in. If it's not Christian, it's bad. We're going to kill you for it. So that's where the idea of the bad side of demons came in mostly. It wasn't even because it was good or bad, it's because it wasn't Christian. Now, I also found with Socrates, he found that they could change nature according to how you approach them. A person who's really negative would have the spirit acting in a negative way. Person is positive, sought guidance, could listen to that guidance, the connection was always positive. So it seems there wasn't really a difference in the type of demon. It's how you approach it. It's much a reflection of you. It is an ad it's like an a higher self add-on to you, like something which actually connects with you and puts you in touch with more power beyond yourself. Increases your kind of higher wisdom so you can actually get guidance. But it can be used either way. If you're a negative person or with these negative agendas, you can amplify those too. So it's a thing to be aware of then, in any kind of thing we do to amplify power, you can amplify the negative side too. A lot of people want more power, but they're actually already creating problems themselves. If they had more power, they create those problems more powerfully. It's not really about having more power. It's not about being the spirit being good or bad. It's about how you use it, how you take control of your own thoughts, responsibility for your own life. That's the important thing to realize then. These demons is nothing but spirits. They have different names, different traditions. They're not good or bad, they're raw power. It's interesting we look at the kind of different hierarchies of spiritual living systems, like in the Vedic system. Now, these are originally jinn, because it comes from Solomon. He worked the old Arabic tradition. Later, through the more Latin interpretation, they got different names and in Latin and became classed as Goetic demons. Again, a different name because the Romans were much into the Greek. Most Romans actually spoke Greek. And so the names changed. But most of those spirits were seen as having a use. You call them for a reason. Now, notice also that they talk about evocation, not invocation, which means to call out, not to call in. You're calling out something inside you, your hidden powers in your unconscious, aspects of yourself. They can be the shadow, which can be bad side as well, but even the shadow is not always bad. You see, the shadow holds everything you deny about yourself. If you deny your creativity, the shadow's holding that, and you end up having creative people around you making you jealous. So the shadow isn't good or bad, it's all the things you're not owning. So you find working with demons a similar thing. You're dealing with those powers inside yourself that you haven't fully owned. You're bringing them out to make use of them. So the real place of these demons then is the unconscious, you see. They're forces of the unconscious, the stuff that's actually creating our life around us without us being fully conscious of it. All the beliefs and things we are affecting our reality beyond the conscious level. We all learn in this life that we create our own reality, but how many people doing it consciously? I say, I didn't create this. Well, they actually look at your beliefs and see that it's projected out your beliefs. Now, this is an interesting point because it's like when you're looking at what affects the results in your magic, people don't always recognize their beliefs. I don't believe that. Well, the reality is showing you do. Go back and look at your conditioning and realize, oh, this is what led to this belief and it's happening, even though you're not consciously acknowledging it. Because these beliefs are more subconscious and unconscious. And this is where the demons lie. It's the powers of the unconscious, which are there to actually manifest your reality, basically for survival. We're all born with the need to survive, so therefore, the demons in us actually, their survival. You have instincts, those gut reactions which tell you when there's danger, when to, what to avoid, where to go to get find your food, all those things. They're part of our basic survival nature. But if you become more complex, they're still acting in many ways, not just about survival, but success in business and relationships, everything. Because when you look at it, these are extensions of the basic survival instinct. You want to have food, you want to succeed, you want to be healthy, you want to have enough of everything, you have to have a mate and all those things. People still seek the same things. So survival mechanisms are there to get you those things. So all these different instincts in our unconscious are there for survival. But also, when we have self-destructive tendencies, then we have things that act on those too. That's self-destructive forces. That's where you then have these caco demons, the negative demons. Which are not really bad in themselves, they're acting according to your negative tendencies. So the use of demons then is actually through a bring out. Eventually it's through the questioning, because your goesha actually meant purification. You call these demons out, you speak to them. What's going on in your life? Why is this acting as you want it to? You talk to it, get alignment so it actually does the right thing, and then your life back in order. So it's a process of purification. That's what the goetic evocation was about. You call out the demon, speak to it, get it back in order. So it's doing the right thing, not creating problems. Nothing wrong with that, is there? Sounds a good idea. It helps us get our life in order because there's so much happens to the unconscious we're not aware of. We try to do things consciously all the time and things go wrong because so much happens that you don't see. The demon is about dealing with the unconscious or the forces there that are affecting your reality. So when you get it right, it's very useful practice. Trouble is when people have these beliefs about the evil demons, the thorns, those who are the manifest. All comes from the unconscious, see. The first thing we go into the ethers is our projections. I've spoken this when we did the fairy magic. First, people see these little winged creatures and chubby limbs and things, all projections of the child. Then you get the kind of a more half naked, scanty clad warriors and maidens, all projections of the adolescent and various things. You see all these kind of projections in there. Those are not the real ones. In the unconscious, you're going to meet your projections. Let us see beyond those before we get to what's real. The real forces of these other worlds. So basically, if you want to work with demons, you've got to get rid of those projections. The ideas we've been taught about them being bad, all the damage they're going to do, all things that cause us to give our power away. Don't want to deal with this power inside yourself because you think it's bad. Think it's going to cause problems. Well, it's causing problems because you believe that and you haven't actually spoken to it to actually put it in order. It seems more dangerous not to work with them. And this is an important thing. I used to have the arguments with my dad about this because he was Muslim and he thought all occult was bad, all magic was bad. And I said, no, we create a reality anyway. Everybody's doing it. It seems more dangerous not to do it consciously. If you're creating problems for yourself, you're doing black magic, whether you're conscious of it or not. So, where do we draw the line? You're doing bad things to yourself because you're not taking control. The demons are parts of ourselves, our hidden power, our unconscious drives, which manifest stuff at an unconscious level that we're not aware of. We can't be conscious of everything because our mind can't be that busy. You know, it's like, for instance, we have the unconscious controls your heartbeat, your respiration, things like that, your digestion. You can't think about those things because you've got things you've got to do with the conscious mind. Same with all of our life. There's certain things the unconscious is doing. We can't have a conscious mind doing it all the time. We've got to set things so they keep working and not get messed up. Same way, if those forces get messed up, which are affecting our health, we get ill. If you mess up the forces that are creating abundance in our relationships, they go wrong. See, all these forces need to be kept in harmony. So projecting this idea of evil onto them isn't helping, because then they become what we think they are. Remember, expectation and imagination, the two big forces that create our reality. Same forces are working with our spirits we work with. We can't avoid this. If you work with a demon, it doesn't do anything for us. It works with those tools, our desire, imagination, expectation. We've always got to come back to those. So that's the basics of it. I'll go into questions now. I'm sure people have got ideas of various things about demons they've heard about.
So Matthias is asking, are you sure it's okay then to not fear these types of beings?
Why should you fear them? Remember, if you fear them, you're already creating a reaction because it shows you a certain belief around it, which is going to shape it to a degree. Like animals, if you fear an animal, it's going to attack because you're now acting as prey. If it doesn't fear it, it doesn't attack you. With all beings around us, everything, our feelings, our beliefs are affecting it. Therefore, if you're going to approach demons, get your mindset right first. Don't think something evil and dangerous. So even when people have these arcs of protective circles of things to protect them from that demon, they're still projecting this is dangerous. It's not quite healthy yet. We need to own them first to recognize what they actually are.
And he's responded projections, imaginations, and his own experience.
Yes, but experiences are shaped by your belief. That's the thing. What happens is that we tend to think we believe because of experiences, but no, we experience because we believe. One important quality of the magician is to turn that around and actually take responsibility for your beliefs. You don't believe because something happened. Things happen because you believe. You must see belief as cause, not effect. When you see it that way, you actually have more control. What happens, we don't know how to control our beliefs because we think they're caused by our experiences. Once you realize, no, you are charge, belief is cause, not effect, you have more control automatically. You start dealing with it differently. You look at your beliefs, what they're creating, and you change them. You realize it's all you. It's all your power. You are God. You're creating a reality. And all these tools can help you.
And what about beliefs, please?
Which beliefs? I said that we have beliefs about demons affecting us already. But all our beliefs are kind of manifesting negative patterns. Well, although negative beliefs manifest negative patterns, positive beliefs manifest positive things in their life. So, of course, you've got to take control of our beliefs. And this is part of what the Goetic evocation was about. You're calling out that demon, seeing where it's gone wrong, and giving it the instruction to do the right thing, which is changing your unconscious beliefs, basically. How else do you change beliefs? Psychology doesn't adequately deal with it. Affirmations don't reach it, because it's on an instinctive level beyond words. If you're unconscious mind believed every word you said, you'd be real in chaos. The unconscious mind is working survival. It has to discriminate. It'll measure your words against experience, against feeling. If it doesn't fit the survival instinct, it won't listen to your words. So affirmations don't go deep. They won't get to the unconscious. The way to change beliefs is actually to look at the meaning and significance we give to the events. You see, something might happen which could be showing you your potential. But your belief around it is how you relate to that event afterwards. You might say, everything's bad, people are always hurting me. We might find, oh, actually, through this, I found I'm strong. You see, your belief can go either way according to the meaning and significance you give to the event, looking at what you've gained from it, what you've learned from it, what your strength is. So, although experiences have a part of the creation of the belief, it's not the experience itself that creates it, it's the meaning and significance we give to that experience. So what you do to change beliefs, you go back to those experiences that's where the belief was created. You change the meaning and significance you gave to that experience. You look at the potential that it showed. So changing a negative belief to a positive one isn't about just reversing it and do the opposite. It's about finding the potential in that experience that you didn't find. It might have nothing to do with the negative belief. It might be something completely different. It's not just the opposite. It's not how it works. You look at experiences reveal potential. That's how you find your positive beliefs that show you where your potential lies. See, if you look at positive beliefs, what beliefs really do is give you access to resources. It's no good saying, I can do anything. But it's good belief because it means at least you have no limitation. But it doesn't mean you can do anything. But at least all the resources you do have, you don't have any blockage to them. So your belief's chosen to actually give you access to resources you've got. You discover you've got a certain strength, and now there's a belief. You've found that strength. You can use it. That's how beliefs work. So basically, the belief is giving you access to the resource. The demon is the resource. That's the power.
And what about spirits that are sent by other magicians to attack oneself? When
They
someone is
can.
experiencing physical and mental effects, can this spirit be taken control of?
Oh, yeah. There's various ways of doing this. In fact, many of the old systems of magic involved various names of power which control the demons, because the divine name puts it back into harmony, back into its proper divine blueprint where it does the right thing. It's no longer being shaped for an unhealthy purpose. So that's how they work. So basically, if something is sent against you, of course you can change it. So in this case, it's not the demon's fault. Just like in voodoo, the law does what you ask it to because you're feeding it. They don't necessarily have a morality. They're trying to help you. You do it to harm, okay, it'll harm. As the person's the evil, not the demon. But you can change it around. You use the names of power, you put that demon back in place, you control it. The thing is, we have a connection to the collective unconscious. It's the same demon we all use, though we have a personal connection to it. And this we see this in voodoo when we work the Loire. The one who's feeding their Loire better is the one who wins, because you're actually working with the same force in a way, but you have to build a better relationship to it. Same with the demon. If you know how to actually read about the demon in your own consciousness, the other person can't harm you because you're in charge of your own demon. Now, when you do that, it doesn't mean you're going to necessarily use it for bad things because you're in touch with the true will. You really master these demons when you're mastering yourself, working with your own conscious, your beliefs, coming back to your true will, basically, by going through the self-reflection. Know what you're here for, what you want. You ever actually have a purpose that's aligned, then the demons are aligned with you. So then your pacts are more powerful. You have a pact with a demon that's actually working on something that's really aligned to its purpose and your purpose, what you're really meant to do. Pacts formed outside that knowledge of self are weak. So the black magician often has weak pacts, easily turned back on them, easily taken away from them. You see, demons are not just for black magicians. There are many people these days who use demonic evocation for purification, for improvement of the self. When you look at modern interpretation of the demons, a lot of people are putting it out there now are using for very positive things, which is completely different from the ancient things written in the books about how you can actually adjust your belief system, your behavior with other people, and various things, and used in psychology to actually produce all kinds of subtle changes. And there's many new benefits that people are creating, or people or are discovering.
Thank you. And then the next question is, well, what then about the stories are satanic secret societies and their organized worship of certain entities? Are the demons they work with different entities?
They're egregores. They're created. The thing is, when somebody believes in a certain form and it's been feared for many generations, it gets a very strong egregore. That's the idea of Satan. Now, Satan actually came from the Hebrew Shaitan. A lot of people say it's the opposer. No, it meant the accuser. But if you look at the Hebrew teachings, Satan did everything God told him to go and test people. It was nothing against God. How can you have anything against God when God creates everything? But some of the Christianity it got tits turned into this kind of opposer to God that does all bad things. Very much used to as fear to control people. You have to come to the church, although your baby will be taken by the devil. This thing, you have to be baptized, all those things. Good business. So basically, they create this image of fear. Use the old Hebrew idea and twist it and said, no, you've got this evil devil here, creates all these bad things, you need protection from it. So you've got the last 2,000 years. Millions of million people have been fearing this thing, so you've got a very, very strong egregore. When you look at that, that's a very irresponsible use of our creative power, because it is our creation. The first thing to do is break down that belief. Don't put energy into that egregore. This might still be in the collective unconscious. The first step is to get it out of your consciousness. Don't believe in it. So when people actually work with these things, yeah, they work in big sacrifice, all the different things to actually get into the energy of this egregore and direct it. So it's true, there is a lot of power in that. But an egregore is not the same as a demon. A true relationship with spirits can overcome the egregore easily once you know what you're doing. Some of the forces are universal, you see. And we have different names, different traditions. Look at the creation of the universe. You have a creation, you have a destruction, you have preservation. These are basic forces that begin everything. What they call Father, Son, and Holy Spirits, or it's Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. They have a similar idea. So the power of destruction is part of the whole thing. Everything that's created is also destroyed and broken down and renewed all the time. So there are destructive powers, not necessarily evil. You work with that primal force of destruction, you can destroy anything, but usually it's aligned with the true will. That's why it works. We're trying to use it from a kind of a shallow, egocentric point of view. You don't access the full power. Say, if I work with Kali, or even work with the demon Abaddon, which is the destroyer in that form, I'm working with a pure force of destruction. I can destroy an egregore with that, because the egregore is less real. It's only a creation out of warped minds, uncontrolled imagination. A controlled imagination will overcome the uncontrolled imagination. It's how energies work. The kind of coherent energy is more powerful. Like a laser. A laser is a coherent light. It can cut through metal. The same power in a laser can cut through metal in a light bulb would be about 25 watts. Barely lights a room. Coherent energy is what's powerful. So if you actually work in alignment with that pure force and then what it is and do it with a true will, it overcomes much bigger things that are not aligned. So yes, you can destroy the devil. You can destroy all these kind of egregores and things that people project at you. You can destroy vast groups of black magicians, doesn't matter how many they are. Do it all the time, and it's like I often describe it as a pack of sheep surrounding a wolf after someone told them to strike their numbers. Now they're cowards, that's why they have to go in these big groups and dominate everybody. There's no real power. There's some power, yes, but it's overcome by real power, coherent power.
Okay, let's move on to this question here. Oh no, he's asked one before then. Oh, he's got it. It's got, oh, here it is. Because it's got a wonderful word in that I'm not sure I can pronounce accurately. So apologies. When you have made a pact with Lilith to reject the Shem HaMeforash, excuse me, does it then mean you can't work with the books that combine the power of both demons and the Shem HaMeforash?
Not really. You see, even that is a kind of based on a basic belief system. It's how you see the Shem HaMeforash. Basically, it's become very restrictive because that's the way religion has dealt with it. You have to follow these rules, these are restrictive. People are denying the chaos. And chaos is creative power. Think about it, when you're being creative, you're not orderly. Chaos reaches beyond the order, breaks the order, and creates something new. Creativity is in chaos. The creative power is chaotic. Order has to be broken. But quite often, when people are looking at these angelic forces, they're looking at order. They want to keep the universe in order. Yes, you all need some order in their lives, but sometimes the order becomes stagnant. It needs to be broken, and something new and better has to come along. So these orderly forces are not the whole. The chaos is actually much faster. So with Lilith, you're dealing with forces of chaos, but it's not anarchy. It's directed chaos. It's intelligent chaos. It's creative chaos, both creative and destruction, with a greater plan. Often beyond our conscious mind, we align with something, a divine plan, so everything evolves and grows and expands, we become more. That's a part of evolution. It's a bit like in the Garden of Eden, they didn't want them to eat the apple of knowledge. Stay in that little garden where you're safe. Don't reach out there and grow. And Lilith was the first wife of Adam who then tempted Eve to eat the apple because it's like she wasn't going to stay there, she was going to grow into power, expand. So Lilith is about the expansion, it has to embrace the chaos. So quite often it's rejecting these orderly forces which confine you. So although the angels have a purpose, when you want order, there's time they confine you. So it's about finding this balance, knowing when you want order, when it's time to shatter it, to have something better. When the orders become restrictive. So at first, when you wake the earth, you're actually coming back to the kind of free will, the chaos, to actually break that order being imposed upon you, so you become free. That's what that moment you're making that vow with Lilith that you're going to reject all those laws because they're restricting you. That's also a law that you don't have to follow. It's a thing. It's an interesting paradox here. See, a lot of people think they've made a law, now it can't be broken. They made a promise, they can't break it. But why not? Life's changing, evolving. There's a time it's appropriate, then suddenly it's not. So you don't even have to follow the laws you've made or the policies you've made. The FC doesn't mean you break them without reason, think you can just get do what you like. That's kind of anarchy and the kind of adolescent rebellion. That's what it's about. But you realize it's not serving anymore. Have to change it. So you always have that choice. So you made that first choice to break free of that chaos. You didn't have a choice to know when to or what to break free of that kind of imposed order. You then have a choice of when to follow the order, when not to. You use your own wisdom, as well as the guidance coming from Lilith, to actually have more understanding of when it's appropriate and when it isn't. So you see, there aren't really any laws. There's always questioning and looking deeper, understanding why.
In your article, you state that angels do not fall. What are the watchers in the book of, excuse me, is it Enoch or Noch, angels,
Enoch.
demons, something else entirely?
Enoch.
What, yeah. So what are they if you say, if you state that angels do not fall?
That's the thing, it's a different name in a different tradition. Angel actually comes from angle, because the Greek, it's not even a Hebrew word, I mean, the original name of these winged beings was the Lamassu, which comes from Babylon. So the whole angel is just, it's comes different names. Lamassu originally are both demons and angels. It's another name. In the Hebrew system of what they called angels, the same with what the Goetic system called demons. You may find, for instance, they all co correspond. There's 72 angels that have Shemhamphorash, there's 72 Goetic demons. When you look at them, they all have the same properties across over. But what happens is that one religion says, we are right and you are wrong. Therefore, ours is better than yours. Yours has to be bound under ours. Therefore, now yours are demons, the angels are better than those, and our angels are going to make your demons obey. It's simply a religious argument. So, what they call a fallen angel is simply saying, you are lower than us. You're not in our religion, therefore you are lower. You've fallen. You see, it's all kind of ego coming in and control. The same force. Look at the property of what it actually does, it's the same. It's just a different name in different religion, different name, different language. And therefore, they put different religious laws around it to say we are better than you and you have to do it our way.
And could you please make a comment on the Loire? Are they projections as well? Are they any free world creations that are totally independent from ourselves, regardless of the inner work that we do, cannot be changed according to our perceptions and beliefs? Would this be the ancient ones? Where do they fit in? So there's multiple questions in there. Do you want to go for the first one, which
No,
is where do the Loire fit in?
let's try and do it all because it's
Okay.
all related. It's like
Yeah.
sometimes hard to actually do just one question. We could look at the whole picture here. Basically, when we first come from source and we separate, out of all that vast power, we suddenly this little thing, all that power was left outside ourselves. That's when the gods are created. It's power we left outside ourselves, so there is no difference between inner and outer. It's all the same. We've separated because we live in this individual existence now. Some of us are gods. We can't live in that full consciousness all the time because, we have limited human mind and our brain rested unconsciously. So we've got these other beings doing it for us. That's what we've left outside ourselves. So in a way, they're not separate. There's no difference between inner and outer. That's the illusion too. But also, many of these forces become fixed because there are lenses that are created. You see, this pure energy of creation, which can do anything, doesn't know what to do. You first have an idea, I can do this. Then you create a lens. It's like a lens is like focusing energy in a certain direction. I'd like to describe more like the magnetic lens in a particle accelerator. There's nothing there apart from the field which bends energy. So electrons are put in a certain direction, the particle is given a direction. So it's nothing there but energy, but it directs things like a magnetic lens. So each deity is simply like stating that pure creative force in a particular direction. So all the different things you can do with that potential now have different lenses, which we call different deities. It's really useful because now we know it can do this. When you've got pure energy, it's chaos. You don't know what to do with it yet because you haven't had an idea. Once it's been done once, we then have a lens, we can do it again. Certain things we all want. Okay, I want to create love, I want to create money, I want to protect myself, I want to kind of remove obstacles. They all have deities for those purposes. They are lenses. But also, what happens? People create new lenses. In voodoo, some of the Lars are once human. What happens then? That person's created a new lens. They could something with their magic. They achieved something. So when you invoke that particular Loire, you're not invoking that person. You are using the lens he created. You can work that kind of magic to get that kind of result. That's what it's really about. There are lenses that get something done, but we have to know how to bring them in, because it doesn't just respond to voice, it's not a conscious process. We're understanding how we actually connect unconsciously to these lenses to channel the energy into the direction we want to create what we want. So each lens is taking energy in a particular direction to do have a different effect. So you can consider like the pure energy of creation to be like electricity. There are things like light bulbs turn into light, heaters turn into heat, radios turn into the sound. You're changing different forms for the effect you want out of that pure energy of which can do anything. Electricity, raw energy on its own, you don't do anything. It'll give you a shock. You don't want it. You want to do things with it. Same with the creator. A lot of people say, just what with the one creator? Why have these different gods? Because they're the ones that do things. Having just a creator is just having just the electricity with nothing to plug into it. So each of these deities, whatever form you system you come from, are lenses which direct that creative energy into a particular direction. Now, some of them are the same lens with a different name, as it's the 72 angels, the Hampshire, the same function as the 72 Goetic demons, which were originally 72 Ifrits, Wicked Jinn of King Solomon. Doesn't matter what you call it, there's a lens which does this particular thing. You can't say it's evil under this name and good under that name, just because you're a different religion. No, it's a lens which does something. But people attach different sides of it. It's like, for instance, the energy to create money. Now, obviously, money is a modern thing. Was well, reasonably anyway. Animals didn't have it. We had other things, instincts for survival of food and everything. That we had this the idea of money. Suddenly, needs money, so we create a lens which creates money. Now you can call that a demon. So, eventually, the jinn was called Jashay under King Solomon, a jinn that brings you money. Nothing wrong with that. Under Christianity, first came a Latin name, Mammon, which meant money, and they said it's the game of greed, evil now, sin, greed. But that's only how they associate it with money. That's only how they kind of relate to money. Are you greedy when you want money? Is this bad? It's no difference. We have a jinn which brings money, or say Lakshmi, a goddess, brings money, or a demon brings money. It's the lens that creates money. We give it different names, different forms, and different traditions, but it's the same lens. It's a function. How we use the energy of what we want to create. We see how we attach all kinds of beliefs to something and attitudes, and now say this is now evil because it's greedy. No, that's money. You're greedy, not that. You don't have to be greedy when you've got money. Some people are, some people aren't. Some people are greedy without money.
Somebody's asking, but I thought fallen angels had chosen to cut themselves off from source, so had to loosh others to survive.
Everything is separate from source in order to be an individual. When we are one with source, we're all one. There is no individuality. We separate from source. First separation, people became us. That first source divided into the archetypes, archetypal energies. These are actually preconceptual. Before we are given any form, they're basic, simple functions, what they can do. It's like I said, with the basic electricity, it can become light, heat, sound, and so on. These are basic forces, archetypes. Then we gave them many new forms. There's different levels of which we come from oneness into 50 and then hundreds and then millions of people. All different levels of separation from this oneness. So the angels be linked to this first 50. First of all, there were 50 of everything. Later, it was 72, then it was 99 in Allah and so on. But there were 50 basic archetypes. They were seen in the hosts of heaven, in the kind of a number of snakes and Medusa's head, in the hounds of hell, and the number of heads that Cerberus had. I mean, actually, they draw Cerberus of three heads because it's very hard to draw a 50-headed hound on a vase. So, but basically, it went to 50 heads because all these things are representative, just like Kali has 50 heads on a necklace, the 50 Sanskrit letters, 50 aspects of consciousness. These are the first 50 archetypes. So, the first angels linked to those. Yes, separate from the one. They're longer one, they're now 50. Each one's slightly different. They aren't one anymore, but each one is doing what it does, what it's meant to do. This one is divided into 50, so I could do these different 50 different things. Now they're all acting individually, doing those things. But we say, okay, they don't have free will. Well, actually, if you separate from source and are doing your own thing, you've got free will. That's when they call it a demon. It's not obeying source and what's doing what it does. Well, yeah, that's what separated force does. With an angel or demon, it's doing what it does. Not necessarily following somebody else. It's doing what it's made to do. This way they've made these stories of fallen angels. Oh, you rebelled against God, they were kicked out of heaven and you were over there, and these ones are obeying, these ones are not. No, each one is only doing what it does because that's what it's created for. The one separated into different functions as part of the creation of the universe.
That's all right. Sorry, it's just some interference there. Okay, right. Moving on to, I'm all over the place here with my messages today. So, next question is. Apologies, apologies, apologies. Here we go. What steps would you take to create unbreakable permanent protection with demons, and which ones would you recommend?
Okay, first of all, boundary. First of all is Belial. He's the earth demon, but also he's actually the black dragon, which became the foundation of the underworld. Underworld is pure water energy, it's chaos. It has to have a form first. Belial's a black dragon that creates that form of the underworld, therefore it's the first level of boundary. That's a good one to start with, because then you have boundary. I want this form, you're not going to break it. The other demons which would seem the less demons should come around that. Like in the Goetic system, there's Vayne, who's seen like a lion, who's actually quite an aggressive one, who'll destroy the attackers. You've got those who protect boundaries, like Halfus and Malphus, who actually create kind of fortifications. So there's different levels, you see. I'd start with Belial, because he's actually the very foundation of form, structure, what do you want everything to be. Start from the very kind of creation of this. This is my form now, nothing's going to break it. Other than attached to that fortification, like the fortress and the armies which protect it, and they can add later. So that would come under like Halfus, Malphus, Vayne for destroying enemies. There's also Sabinok, who actually makes enemies sick if they attack you. It's a kind of an in-between force, not killing them straight away, but if they keep messing with me, they're going to get ill. They'll soon learn to stop.
Thank you. Scrolling back up. Oh no, someone's just messaged and knocked all my messages off. Oh, the perils of using Zoom. All right, next
Dear.
question. I've practiced multiple systems over the years, including Javanese magic, and found that there were energetic control structures in place, like entities of the teacher or lineage, watching and restricting certain actions, taking energy during workings, and notable resistance and psychic attack when trying to step outside the system or leave it entirely. How is this handled in your systems, especially regarding Javanese magic? Is there more freedom there? And also, what are your thoughts on such energetic control structures in general?
That's right, with beings like Lilith, they won't be controlled. And you may notice actually the light ones, the white magicians, who say you have to follow these rules and you can't leave it. Black magicians tend to be about free will. We'll do what I like, I'm not going to tell me what to do. So it's like finding that balance. Why would you actually get involved in this in the first place? If something's saying you what to do and you can't change it, no, I'm not having that. So you're looking at the beginning, what you're learning to, which deities. You don't take on the deities of a system just because they say so. You have your deities who call you that you're going to work with, and then you find different systems they can work within. I think Swakali came to me. It wasn't just the Hindu path, it came through the Ghori and Tantric paths. There were different expressions of her, even older than Bonjangri, and then to the Dena priests, even older than that. Still Kali, but different expressions. And I found I wasn't stuck to one path, I was following Kali. Then I found Lilith was the same. Different expression, but it's the same power, what you might call the Black Shekinah, the kind of dark, invisible force that's beyond the light. That's the root of the Kundalini. And this is what this is about, force of evolution. So you align with certain forces that are going to help you. That's more important than the guru and the teacher. You have your deity first. Nothing stands between you and that. Too many systems try and put themselves between you and the deity. That's what priests tend to do. And some systems in control say, no, you're going to do it my way. I'm between you and deity. You can't do it by yourself. Okay, this is business. You can't do without them. Look for that one right at the beginning. If somebody's creating dependence, you don't want to know. There are plenty of those who do things without that dependence. And even like the whole guru idea has become sort this way. The idea of the guru wasn't to confine you. It simply means that if you actually listen to me, I can teach you much better than if you're trying to listen to somebody else and get lost in ideas and you're not doing what I say, and therefore it doesn't get results and it gets into chaos. They will say, no, if I'm your guru, you're going to listen to me, not the others. So that way we can actually see if it works. That's why you have a choice of guru. So you wouldn't even take diksha unless you're actually willing to follow that. It doesn't mean that now you do everything they say, and it's only within the actual spiritual path that you listen to my guidance, because this is what I've done, this is what I've taught, I know this works, I know that doesn't work. If you don't listen to me, then I can't help you. So that's why we have that kind of net and a certain level of obedience within that diksha. But it's no more than that, though. It shouldn't be this absolute restriction where you can be punished if you break it, and all those other rules and the vows that keep you in place. So often people have to make vows which bind them. When you see those, stop and think about it. Do you really want to be bound by those vows much later? Of course, you can break them. You will learn to. If you keep expanding, you learn to break and overcome all these controlling people. That's definitely the path of Lilith. If you're following that, there's no danger because you will overcome everything. You might follow something for a while and you realize I've been restricted, I'm going to break it now. I've taught these basic tools for taking power back and giving back shame. That's a start point. If you realize you're giving power back, the power's been taken, you've given it away, you now know how to take it back. Start with that. You get better at it by working with the right deities. Lilith won't have that restriction. She'll break everything if you're actually building a link to her. So again, it's about building your connection to your deities, following your true will, and putting that before anything else outside. Teachers teach you things, but you can be free to follow many things and find what works for you. As a sound Taoism, the Tao that can be taught is not the true Tao. Except here. I just say, I mean, it's like, no, there isn't one teacher. They recognize it in Taoism. It's up to you to understand in whatever you can. You can take different things to different places, whatever works for you.
Sorry, adding many people to the membership, which is fantastic. Right. Next up, this is an off topic. That's not a word. Off topic question, Peter. It's about Shiva Bharawa. I want to ask you if Shiva Bharawa workshop could happen this year. What's the trinity with Kali and Shiva? Could you speak about working with Shiva and with what can he help us with, please?
Shiva's a great liberator. Let's look at the basic trinity, what it really means. When you first come out of oneness and you've created the universe, there's automatic three sides to it, not just two. There's the creation, creator, and created. It can be the experience, the experiencer, the experienced, the recognizer, the recognition, the recognized. You see, there's three things now. That's why you have the Trinity. Out of those, the kind of creation, the act of creation itself is more volatile, less formed than the creator and the created. Created is the most physical. That's why you have to preserve, like Vishnu. It's now, here's a physical world, it's now fixed. Now the creator creates it, and then you've got this bit in the between, act of creation, it's not fixed. By creating, it can also destroy and recreate. That's Shiva's energy. It's liberating because it doesn't get stuck in form. This is why quite often they were seen as Shiva and Vishnu in conflict. One's trying to restrict, the other's trying to break that restriction all the time. But also we go through cycles in life. We have an order that gets broken. We create a new order, which is higher, more evolved. They get broken too, and you keep evolving. So Shiva's energy, that breaking down and rebuilding, destruction, recreation, transformation. So if you're working on transformation, therefore, Shiva's the one to go for. If you're working on protection, Vishnu's the one to go for, because he's that preservation. However, protection isn't always going to work when you have to change, because he's fixed. Shiva is more powerful. He destroys everything in the end. That's why you have these little stories going on where he defeats this one and so on, because it's like the chaos will destroy the order. Destruction will destroy the protector, because you can't stay in fixed order. There has to be constant change. Shiva's energy of transformation. The shield of Shiva is a bit different than the shield of Vishnu. It's not to keep you the same. It's to recognize that in you which is indestructible, the pure awareness. You're not attached to the other things. Nothing affects you because it's all illusion. It's different level of awareness, you see. That's a more powerful place to be. That's more the part of the magician. Kali, being the feminine side of Shiva, is deeper. There's no taking prisoners. When you transform, you can't hold on. Everything will go. You're going to change whether you like it or not. So that's why Shiva is aggressive and dangerous. It's not really dangerous in such that she's changing you to what you need to be. must be scary because people don't want to change, they want to hold on. Or well, they say they want to change, then resist. Well, she won't take the resistance, she'll just take you straight to it. That's Kali's energy. Those who are committed to the path therefore follow that because they're willing to be dragged to there. That's where they want to go. They want to help with getting over their resistance and their fears and so on. So basically, Shiva is a force of transformation. Kali being his Shakti is the pure energy of that. The reason why the masculine and feminine be all things is because the masculine is seen as creating form, with the Shakti, the feminine, is pure power, chaotic. So you can see when that energy takes a form, India now has a structure. The Shiva worship has its rules and so on. The Gauri path under Kali is far more chaotic. It's pure power, formless. So we want a bit of each. That's why they work together. You know, if you want to have Shiva and have Kali as well, because it's rude to invite one without the wife, you know. Can't do it all the time, you've got to bring them together. So generally, you've got a bit of Shiva, a bit of Kali. There are times when you actually have the structure and it's the dance, and it all has a form, but it's all changing. There are times when it's pure destructive power, which just blasts through everything and there's nothing to hold on to.
I'm back. Sorry, YouTube started playing. Not today. It's really, really full moon energy. I don't know if anyone else is experiencing this, but it is utter chaos, this end.
Demons, but the demons.
I've been the demon today. I can tell you that. Right. Another question came in and I've lost it again because I'm busy. Let's scroll down. Okay, here we go. At the tail end of the fairy course with a few questions, you just put out a video about the healing charm. Do you remember doing that one, Peter?
Yeah, we did a little one, yeah.
If you made the physical charm, would you charge it in the River of Heart after having weaved in the spell? But if we
Yes.
don't have the physical ingredients, would this be the most powerful way to get? But if we don't have the physical ingredients, would this be the most powerful way to get the benefit? Would you either charge it yourself in the River of Har and then
Yes.
cast the fairy circle and then last recite the healing spell while weaving it in yourself?
You can do that, yes. Or you can even put it into a crystal, because crystals store practically anything. So that's another way of doing things. Just charge a crystal with it. You can take it into the River Ha, you can do a spell into it, you can weave it in. You combine all these things. It all works. And the more tools you use, the kind of more ground it becomes. The weaving structures it so it stays there in place. The spell calls the energy in. So going to the River Ha is taking straight into the source of energy, so it's always good to go there to do it. But you can weave it into yourself. Trouble is, we are changing all the time. Our cells are being renewed. In a few weeks' time, you won't be the same body. So it doesn't last. That's why you need something else. You can go and do it again, though, that's fine. Go back into the River Ha, do the spell, weave it into you.
The next question, similar when weaving the extra attunements at the end, do you recommend that before weaving them in, we do the same charge ourselves in the River of Har first and then cast the circle before playing and receiving the audio attunement and weaving the file?
You can. It all helps because you're taking control then. At first, when you listen to a fire, you're letting me do it. As you learn, you're taking more responsibility, taking control of your own magic. You can do that. That way, you're building your own power. You're taking charge of the whole current.
And then finally, when making the sigil for the fairy manifestation ritual, why not use the fairy runes to build the sigil? Or are they there just for reference?
Oh no, you can use those. When we write spells are in fairy runes, I mean, some of the spells are written. If you actually look at the runes and make them up, you have more sense of what they're about, why these runes make up that particular spell, and see the power of each rune is in there and making that energy up. So, yeah, it's very similar to any runic system that each rune has a power. You combine them into a word, into a spell, and they all work together to create a more complex pattern, which has an effect. So, you can do it with fairy runes too, you can do it with dragon runes. Any system will do it, any rune system.
And then finally, at the end, with the healing our own web, this is not a one-shot deek. I don't know what that word means. This isn't a one-shot thing, right? This is a process of many sessions using the Sri Yantra each time.
Oh yeah, you find well. Yes, I mean you do get to an end where you find, okay, I'm perfect now. But you know, when you're really perfect, you change all the time. There's new traumas and new stresses to deal with, and new things to learn. But what the Sri Yantra is doing, bringing back to the Divine Blueprint, you might need to do it again because you get pulled out again. You know, that's life. But if you've got physical problems, so you can keep working on it to actually bring you more and more back into alignment to perfection. So yes, you can use it all your life.
Gosh, I think that's it. I think that's all the
Okay.
questions so
That's
far.
fine.
Oh, here we go.
Well,
On
fine.
time. On time. Here we go. Next one. Is there another way
Okay.
to work with the Great Destroyer Dragon other than the Twin Blade Destroyer empowerment?
Oh no, yes, you can use the spell by itself. I mean, the twin blades actually help focus that more because I've actually made something which channels energy already made for the job. But you can charge other things for that. You can simply use the spell directly or you during your dragon riding. Basically, when you have ride on your dragons, you also sometimes have weapons on the astral, not on the physical. So you fly up to Obi-Wan, you pick up destructive power, fly for your dragon, and destroy something. So you can simply use it directly that way.
Okay, so one more time. I'm doing a copy and paste here. Copy, paste into the chat. So what I am putting in here now is, once again, there is the article. If you have not already read the article, Demons, What Are They? There is a link to join the Dakini's workshop that is happening in 33, 4 minutes. And if you want to join the membership as a whole, the link is there. So please do come and join us in 34 minutes. Next question. What can I do to help my child who has constipation for a week? I have been doing psionics.
Okay, constipation, obviously, is the large intestine. First thing to do is work on the meridian. First point to do is the large intestine 4, which is right in the joint of the between thumb and finger, kind of couple of bones. But also check the tongue. If tongue is too red, there's too much fire and often up that creates inflammation. In that case, you do the large intestine 11, this point here, just by a little bony bit on the end of the arm. So do those first to get the intestine meridian working.
And if they're not a point holder practitioner?
Well, you can learn to channel energy, otherwise herbs. Let's see, best getting it from various corners to cause, so one has to look at the whole video to check the meridian that's out. But generally, figs and prunes get things moving. Well,
Senna, as Sarah has quite rightly said, Senna works a treat.
it's quite strong, but you don't want to use it too much because you can get addictive. Then people can't manage without it afterwards. Strong stuff. There are gentler things you can use just to kind of heal the bowel, like comfrey and slippery elm. They have a healing, soothing effect on the bowel lining, so it can actually correct itself better, keeping balance better. And of course, golden seal kills any infections in there to actually help them the intestine regulate itself. And maybe a pinch of cayenne to stimulate it. Just a small amount, not too much. You don't want to get too much fire in there. So I said a really good general combination for the bowel would be a comfrey, slippery elm, golden seal, and a tiny bit of cayenne.
Yes, I can account for the slippery elm and the golden seal. Works a treat. Okay, just lots and lots and lots of joining questions thus far.
Okay.
So, everybody, the next Q&A will be taking place in on the 4th of June, I do believe. The date is the 4th of June. And the next topic for the Q&A, this is for students only, and it is all about psychic protection. So I was just questioning myself, thinking, is this for students only? And I think it is. It's about psychic protection. So do expect a new article to be released from Peter. The topic will be around psychic protection. So do come prepared with your questions. And the following on workshop after today's one, which is all about Dakinis, Peter will be facilitating sound healing. So if you want to learn all about sound healing, if you want to be empowered into sound healing, if you have questions around sound healing, then you might like to join us on the 20th of June for that workshop as well. One final question coming for you, Peter, before we do close today's public Q&A, and that is, I am getting close to doing darkness course next. Then I want to do the crystal course after that. On the website, the video has an order for the fairy and dragon magical path, and the text next to it has a different order. And then the courses are listed in, oh, and then in the manuals, it's in a different order. So I have counted at least four different orders.
Bit of
Peter, what order is right?
chaos in there. It's not strict. Basically, you need dragon, fairy, and darkness first before you do the others, but then the crystal can fit anywhere after that because it doesn't matter where you put that before the high magic or training ones. But generally, I'd say that you do dragon, fairy, and darkness first. Obviously, confidence is the last one, and maybe shining ones is before that, but the high magic, the very initiations, the crystal, you can rearrange those. Doesn't really matter too
Okay.
much, so long as you get your basics in place.
Yeah, I was those first three is a definite
Yeah.
before moving on. I hope that's answered your question, Stefan, and I'm glad that the chaos hasn't put you off.
Still
Demonic
part of it.
chaos.
Still part of it, you know. It's bound to come up on this today when the demon showing itself, you know. Okay, it's there. We know it's there now.
what a wonderful combination. Demons and full moon.
Oh
Great.
God, yeah.
Thanks for that. Okay, so the end should be fairy high magic and then confluence. Correct, Stefan. Okay, my friends, so all the links are there. If we are going to see you in 30 minutes' time for the workshop on Tacchini's, then I look forward to speaking to you in 30 minutes. Otherwise, the next Q&A for Students Only Psychic Protection, 4th of June. Looking forward to seeing you there. Thank you so much, everybody.
Okay.
Have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your weekend if we don't speak to you again. And you know where to find us in MeWe. Thank you,
Okay.
everyone.
See you all. Bye.
Bye.